It's a show about fantasy football.
Welcome back to a show about fantasy football. We are actually going to be talking about relevant things this week because training camp started. And so now we can talk about things besides Nathan's favorite brand of toilet paper and the likes of that. So
when did
excited
I talk about
that.
My favorite?
No, just again, I don't know. Nobody wants to hear it.
I don't ever remember talking about that.
I heard that when I was gone last week, that's all you guys talked about.
Charmin Ultra Strength.
No.
Cottonelle. Something is comfort something. I don't know. It's nice. It feels like anyways. So we'll talk this week, expectation versus reality of in drafting in a redraft league. What ends up happening most of the time. It can be a little bit jarring when you face reality in some of these drafts. And then we'll talk about rookie price checks for Dynasty and kind of how things are sorting out, and maybe how we want to keep adjusting our Dynasty ranks and also our Dynasty trade strategies as we go through this year and do this. So happy to be with you today. We're going to start like we always start and talk about NFL news, in which there are actual NFL headlines this week. Hooray!
Like a lot of them.
Ryan, what's the first headline for this week?
First headline is probably the most consequential piece of news in the entire world, and it is that Jim Irsay is back at Colts camp.
Yay.
I personally don't find this as news. I figured you guys might think it is important as he is your, I was going to say your God King, but I don't think that's probably way to phrase that.
Just the best owner in the league. I'm kidding.
Right. No, I mean, Ryan, it's great to be back at training camp, man. I do a mean Jim Irsay impression. Dude, he was spitting at training camp. I saw some of the, he's just sitting on his golf cart and everybody's asking him questions. He like can't walk though, so that sucks. But yeah, he is back.
From all the drugs. All right, moving on.
Yeah, so Jordan Love got a 4-year, $200 million year deal. Second in the NFL in average money per year. Congratulations, Jordan Love. We talked about this at the beginning of last week. Ryan, your thoughts on the new Love contract?
I mean, it makes sense, everything considered. Am I happy about it? No. Am I secretly hoping that this is looked upon as the Daniel Jones contract from last year is? Yes. Do I think that's going to happen? No. I mean, it's purgatory up here in the Great White North. We get nothing but the Packers having fantastic quarterbacks. So it's just another year of the same old, just losing to the Packers, I guess.
Well, and just losing in general for the most part. And on that note, Tua Tagovailoa, 4 years, $210 million, which is fourth in the NFL on average money per year. Nathan, your thoughts on the new Tua contract that we kind of all saw coming, but
show me the money, like you said at training camp. No, I think that's exactly what I expected. Again, I told not just me, plenty of people were saying, brace yourself for the Tua contract because it's going to be higher than you expect. Of course it is with the new market now. We knew this was going to happen. We knew the Dolphins were going to overpay him because where are they without him? They are where they were before they got him. So to me, they have to make do with, you know, a middle of the pack quarterback that is a good pocket passer and can get the ball to his playmakers. And hopefully they can make a run in the playoffs if they can stay healthy. I mean, you're looking at a team last year that was looking to be at the top of the league in the first half of the year until they were just absolutely riddled with injury left and right with some of their best players. I mean, they had no defense left by the end of the year. And that was pretty unfortunate. So I think with Tua getting paid now, they're obviously not going to have the financial flexibility for the next few years that they have had for the last couple of years to get the guys that they've wanted. So, I mean, this is their time. This year, all eyes are going to be on the Dolphins to make a run because they're going to be in cap purgatory for the foreseeable future.
Now, how much of this was Tua, like how much of this was the Dolphin being scared that they wouldn't get a quarterback if they let Tua walk versus Tua actually earning this amount of money?
Oh, it's absolutely the former. I mean, do you blame the Dolphins for being terrified that they're going to go back into QB purgatory if they don't re-sign him?
I mean, this is an average NFL QB being paid as one of the top QBs in the NFL. But it's because, I mean, we talk about this now, Patrick Mahomes, 11th highest paid in the league, Josh Allen, 12th.
Yeah.
And part of it is the market resetting itself
it's
every year.
Resetting,
but again, like, you know, franchise guy tweeted out, he's like, yeah, the Love signing and the Tua signings are very similar monetarily, but actually, like, when you're looking at the situations behind the two, they're completely different. Which he's definitely biased because he says with the Packers,
he's
like,
they
saw 1 year and they're like basically like investing in him with the hope that he can continue to be that. And with Tua, they're just scared that they're not going to get anybody else. But for the Packers, it's just as risky. You've seen 1 year of Jordan Love. And basically what we learned from Jordan Love in year one is that he belongs in the NFL. Really no more or no less. He didn't look like an elite quarterback. He looked good. He looks good enough to get paid, good enough to be the highest paid NFL quarterback in the history of the NFL. No, I don't think so. But again, like I think with both of these, it's a little bit interesting. And I think it is reminiscent of the Daniel Jones contract in the sense that there is a little bit of suspicion that these guys didn't deserve the money that they got. And the reality of the situation is in the NFL, when you have guys like this, that even though they may not be the best quarterback, that are getting contracts in a year where you really haven't had the market set itself yet, they're a lot of times going to set the market themselves. You've seen it happen this year with Justin Jefferson already, right? AJ Brown got a new contract as well. So it's happened on the wide receiver side of things, and it just keeps happening and happening and happening. And so I do think this is interesting from, you know, an NFL standpoint and from, you know, just a strategy standpoint as an NFL franchise, like how they view their situation going forward, how confident are they in their quarterbacks? So,
yeah, I think when you're comparing it to Daniel Jones, who had an out after his second year, which is after this year, to his contract is guaranteed through 2026. So he's got this year, 2025, 2026. His cap hit this year is $9 million, 59 in 25 and 63 in 26. So a lot of that money's up front, $167 million guaranteed, total guaranteed. Guaranteed $93 million at signing. So it's, I mean, that's legitimate money. Like,
yeah.
As opposed, if you're talking about like the actual, like reading between the lines of the contract with Tua compared to Daniel Jones, like, I guess you could say that, yeah, he's being overpaid potentially like Daniel Jones, but with the actual contract, like Miami is stuck with Tua as opposed to New York being stuck with Daniel Jones, and they are taking a major financial hit by signing him to this. For sure, comparatively. So
yeah. In terms of news about Michael Gallup and his status inside the NFL, Michael Gallup has retired from the NFL, which this was one where, you know, you had some hope for Michael Gallup, but I think that
a couple years ago.
Did 2 years ago and him being the wide receiver two behind CeeDee Lamb, but retires from the NFL. So that kind of came out of nowhere. Once dynasty darling Hakeem Butler was signed by Cincinnati at tight end. So a little bit interesting there. Ryan, thoughts on Hakeem Butler?
Way back in 2019, I had him ranked as the 8th best wide receiver in that class. But he sucks. I don't think he actually ever had a catch in the NFL with the Steelers, the team that drafted him. But he was a dynasty darling at one point. People loved him. He's height, speed, that whole thing. Went to the CFL, put on some pounds, and I think it was like their MVP or Super Bowl MVP equivalent last year for one of the teams. So I guess there's life for those truthers if they still exist.
Well, if I've learned anything from the CFL, it's that they can really, really deliver on successful NFL players coming out of that.
It almost always works out.
For sure. Yeah.
Almost always. And then let's do some camp hype. Nathan, read some of these camp hits.
Yeah, so AJ Dillon, which we did not touch on in our Dynasty video today. I mean, he's in the best shape of his life. Which I guess means
that means his thighs are slightly less giant.
0.01 seconds faster, a faster 40 time than he ever has, which is still, you know, one of the slowest ones in the league. AJ Dillon is still AJ Dillon. His play style has not changed. I'm very happy that he's in the best shape of his life. I guess that means he'll get an extra carry or two a game, which is still only,
it's a big deal.
10 carries a game.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Maybe he holds off Marshawn Lloyd for an extra couple snaps or so.
Yeah. Ryan, can you explain to me why the Packers just won't let go of AJ Dillon, even though he's literally one of the most abysmal running backs to watch in the NFL that gets consistent opportunity?
No, unironically, I cannot. Oh. The only thing I can think of is that he took a pretty team friendly deal to stay there. Whether that's because he had no suitors or he's just, you know, happy to be there. I mean, I'm not in the locker room. Maybe he's just a great dude's dude, but I don't know. It baffles me because he is just not productive.
Yeah, I'm not getting the friendly team deal thing either. Like, to me, the friendliest team deal would have been no deal at all, but here we are. Quentin Johnson, quote, got a bad rap. According to Jim Harbaugh, he's going to be a problem for people.
He's a problem for end zones.
What people is he talking about? Like a problem for the Chargers? Like I need to know what this means. What I actually think it means is it is relevant that Jim Harbaugh said this. I think he's A, being supportive of his players, being supportive of his guys. B, Quentin Johnson. I think this is just a reminder that Quentin Johnson is not completely entirely dead. Do I think Quentin Johnson is going to come back and be insane and have some breakout year, even though odds are against him historically, and when you're looking at the data, no, I don't think that's going to happen necessarily. But I mean, when you're talking about a dynasty dart throw, why not? When you're talking about a fantasy dart throw, like, he's dirt cheap. Why not? It's pretty wide open outside of Ladd McConkey, and there could be some opportunity there in theory if he could string things together this offseason. So, yeah.
All right, last year, Jameson Williams is stronger and more explosive with better body control in the air. It literally looks like a different player from a year ago today. Beat writer. That's why the beat writer got assigned to the Lions, is because he didn't know what he was talking about, and so they sent him there. Ryan, I need some outside of the bubble commentary on Jameson Williams, because we've already been crapping on him today in videos. So what's the deal?
You're not going too far out of the bubble. I don't know if it was you or Nathan or Dom, whoever liked my tweet from over the weekend or last week of Jameson Williams throwing up during practice a few times. I said I threw up every single time I saw his stat line last year. I don't think he's good. He was a great profile technically when he was coming out. I had him as a fourth receiver in the class. There were people who had him as number one. Speed's great if you're able to run routes and catch balls and be more than just a vertical deep threat. And I haven't seen a lot of Jameson Williams doing anything other than that, which kind of limits his ability to play coherent football. I guess technically he does have an opportunity opening because Josh Reynolds, who beat him out last year for snaps, left to go to Denver. So maybe he is actually now the wide receiver two in that offense. But I mean, he's a bust in my mind. It's a little reactionary. I know it's only his second year and he missed most of his first, but it's a what have you done for me lately? And Jameson Williams has not done anything for me ever.
Yeah. And I think that literally looks like a different player from a year ago today quote thing is different player from being an incompetent deep threat to now being potentially a competent deep threat, which is still a deep threat, which is still limited and inconsistent targets, which is still, a guy that stretches the field and gets more targets and opportunity and volume for Amon-Ra and Laporta and Gibbs.
Yeah.
Which is right where Jared Goff makes his money.
You have to give him this too. He's definitely a different player than he was 2 years ago when he was gambling inside of NFL facilities.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's a positive as well. But that is a positive. With JMO, I think the bar is set at don't gamble and throw up more times than you actually get targets in training camp. And then at that point, I feel like we're headed in the right direction. So let's go to our first topic here and let's talk about drafting in your fantasy football league's expectation versus reality. Round one, expectation. This player will be a weekly difference maker and league winner. Reality.
Last year, 8 of the top 12 picks were busts, finishing more than 6 spots below projected ADP. Diggs, Eckler, Justin Jefferson, Chubb, Kelsey, Garrett Wilson, Jamar Chase, and Bijan Robinson.
And we've talked about this. We continue to talk about this on our Domain Fantasy Football channel on YouTube. You should subscribe if you haven't. We talked about the safety between, running back and wide receiver this year. Have you done any fantasy drafts yet, Ryan?
Not redraft. I'm not a redraft guy. I don't think I've done one since high school, if I'm being completely
honest.
Oh my gosh,
that's a long time. Wow. Jeez. Okay.
Can I make a note about this?
Yeah.
Because I do think it's interesting. The top 12 guys according to ADP last year in fantasy were Diggs, Eckler, Chubb, and Kelsey. You see common denominator there. They're all old guys. They're all guys that are twilight of their careers, on the well beyond the back half of their careers for sure. And I think this year you're seeing a flip where it's a lot of those young cornerstone guys, a lot of really similarities between dynasty values and the guys going at the top of dynasty drafts and the guys going at the top of your fantasy drafts. So maybe, barring injury, of course, always barring injury, maybe you're going to see a little more consistency this year in the first round. I think last year was a recipe for disaster that, not a lot of people saw coming, but was just an unfortunate season where a lot of people decided to fall off at the same time.
Yeah. And John, I guess I'll quit asking you questions, Ryan, since you don't even play redraft, but John mentioned,
I know what's going on.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
I'm not a moron.
Well, I mean,
he's clearly buying the Jameson Williams.
Sorry. Right. Yeah. So. Clearly he is. I will say, this year I have been going more wide receiver than I have running back for the safety. But again, if you look at the metrics, more than half of these guys typically bust in a year.
Yes.
So what John wants to do, what our homework is for this one, and the, it really the expectation here and the kind of advice is to hedge your bets in the second, third, and fourth round as you continue to go through and draft these guys, and also diversify who you draft in the first round. Don't go and draft the same guys every year. This is fun. Who are the top five players in ADP in the first round of ADP most likely to bust this year?
This year?
Yeah. And let's I've got my first one. I
mean, let's be honest, Christian McCaffrey.
Christian McCaffrey is absolutely on that.
Yes.
100%.
Yes. But it doesn't mean I'm not taking him 101.
That was not my first one.
That
was not my first one.
But he's on your list, right?
Oh, yeah. He'd be on there. But I think Justin Jefferson is the one who's at the biggest risk of busting.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. Yeah. Let's call a spade a spade here, guys. I mean, he's going from Kirk Cousins to the combo of Sam Darnold and J.J. McCarthy.
But let's call the best wide receiver in the NFL the best wide receiver in the NFL who is able to produce and get double-digit targets consistently with Nick Mullins last year.
Yeah, but if we're... I still find it a little bit hard to believe that he's going to finish. I mean, right now he's going as the wide receiver 4 and player 5 according to underdog ADP.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I would not be surprised in the slightest if a few guys behind him, namely Amon-Ra St. Brown, A.J. Brown, Puka Nacua, I wouldn't be surprised if those guys jump him. I wouldn't be surprised if you see a couple of the running backs that are a little bit further down in the list having some success, like Breece Hall.
But these are all first-round guys. Yeah. I mean, if these guys finish over Justin Jefferson, I wouldn't consider him a bust.
Right, and you forgot to mention that, you know, Jameson Williams is going to take away from Amon-Ra St. Brown as well. Sure, so there's absolutely no way he's going to jump anyone on this list.
I'm surprised, Ryan. This is...
I'm basing it off of the definition that John gave of finishing more than 6 spots below projected ADP. So if using current ADP, that would just be finishing as player 11 for Justin Jefferson. That's, to me, fully within the realm of possibilities just because the offense is going to be considerably worse.
I'll be honest. I don't think that's a bust.
I don't either. Going by the definition of what we got.
Yeah.
Let's
talk about, we got 4 other guys that we have to mention here. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase has busted before. I think he can bust again.
Ja'Marr Chase.
Easily.
Christian
McCaffrey as well. Yeah, that's 2. Jahmyr Gibbs going at the end of the first round.
I disagree on that one. I think Jahmyr Gibbs doesn't have as high upside as some of the guys in this range, but I think he's fairly safe because of his receiving.
Oh.
I think his floor is fairly high.
Okay.
So I'm not necessarily sure he busts. I think he's a little bit overpriced, but I think he's still going to be productive no matter where he ends up.
I would guess Garrett Wilson is your other guy.
This is tough. Honestly, I'm going to go... What is the common denominator for guys that busted
running
last year?
Running backs. I mean,
no, there's another one.
Age.
I'm going Tyreek Hill for my next one. Just because, I mean, if you're looking at the trend, the old guys have busted at a higher rate than the younger guys recently. And so...
That doesn't mean don't draft old guys.
No,
please
it doesn't
don't
mean,
take I mean, that.
You're still taking McCaffrey at the 101. You're still taking Tyreek Hill at the 103. That's true. But in terms of most likely to bust, I feel like Tyreek Hill's more likely to bust than Amon-Ra or Bijan or Breece Hall. So I'm going Tyreek Hill, Christian McCaffrey, Ja'Marr Chase. My last two would probably be Garrett Wilson just because of the quarterback volatility. Yep. I agree with you there.
Yep.
And then the last one in this is probably...
I mean, with the general Jets volatility... include Breece.
No.
I guess he wouldn't bust. He's
that's
safe.
That's not my
you
pick.
Just wonder what his ceiling is.
My pick, my fifth pick here actually would probably be Puka Nacua because I think there is...
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think there's a world where Cooper Kupp does come back and is dominant. I don't think it's going to happen.
Or where Stafford is out the year.
And at
that
point,
really
that sucks.
Hurts his production. Yeah.
Ryan, I'm curious who the guys on your list are.
I mean, in no particular order, I think it would be Christian McCaffrey, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, Garrett Wilson, and Jahmyr Gibbs. I am concerned about the touchdown vulturing in Detroit from David Montgomery. And I mean, I know that was the case last year and Jahmyr Gibbs had a great season, but that alone is just such a large chunk of points for so many players that it gives me a little bit of cause for concern. I mean, I have him as the 5th best running back in terms of points this year in the projections that I built. But yeah, I mean, a lot of this, it's hindsight 2020 looking at last year's to like find the common denominator, because if you're looking at some of the guys who busted last year, like Diggs was totally not himself. Eckler was not himself. Justin Jefferson got hurt. Nick Chubb got hurt.
Kelsey
Garrett Wilson's quarterback got hurt. Kelsey was a little banged up at times. Jamar Chase's quarterback got hurt. Like, there's so much going into it that is so up in the air. And I know we don't like to predict injuries, you know, as the common denominator for why a player is going to fall. But it's worth the effort of just making sure that you're being a little bit more judicious about who you're going to pick and being careful. If 50%, word of the day. I think it's worthwhile to be cautious and exercise an extra level of caution with your first round pick, just because if you pick the wrong guy, you're very susceptible to losing the league. You can't win your fantasy draft in the first round, but you can sure as heck lose it.
Boom. There you go. All right. Good job, Ryan. You caught yourself too. Let's talk about rounds 2 to 3. The expectation here, the backbone of your team that has high upside to be a league winner. You expect these guys to be
Tony Pollard just screamed
the foundation of your team. Nathan, reality with round 2 to 3 guys.
Yeah, I mean, while players like Amon-Ra, Derrick Henry, Josh Allen, Breece Hall, Jalen Hurts, Keenan Allen were there going in this range. 7 players in this range weren't even close to ADP weren't even close to producing at the level that you were investing in them in fantasy last year.
Facts.
Patrick Mahomes, I mean, biggest name in football, really disappointed last year from a production perspective because of how much they had to lean on the run game and how depleted they were in the pass game. Tony Pollard, Jonathan Taylor, Josh Jacobs, Ramondre, Waddle, and Andrews.
It's a lot of players, man.
There's a lot of guys.
So in rounds 2 to 3, like half the players, about half of them are going to be average starters on your team. You might have some guys that could be league winners. But 25% of these players on average are going to bust. 25% are going to boom, and then the other guys are just going to be about average.
Be neutral. Yeah.
So let's talk about that for this year. This year's disgusting in this range.
Here's a nice encouraging thing. Tony Pollard last year vacated volume fallacy. Don't ever do it again. I don't think we're doing it again this year.
We're not. No, that people are learning.
People are learning, which is really, really good.
I think a boom candidate for this range is Stephon Diggs. Yeah, I think
Kyren and Henry.
Kyren and Henry are both boom candidates. Let me see.
We know DK will just do what he does.
Drake London's a boom candidate.
DK's always the neutral guy.
Obviously, the boom candidates come at the early in the early second, but after that, like the less obvious ones, like Devon Achane, Cooper Kupp, both have really high upside. Derrick Henry has high upside, and I think those are three guys that I'm highlighting. But Ryan, in terms of round 2 to 3 this year, like who are guys that you see that you think could be the boom guys this year?
You know, I think there's a lot of guys on here that I really have questions about, but in terms of the boom, it kind of pains me a little bit. But like, I think Derrick Henry is up there on that list just because he's going to get so much volume. And this is kind of a non-answer, but there's 2 49ers on this section of the list. There's 3 Houston Texans on this section of this list. I don't know who they're going to be, but some of them have to end up inevitably as a boom if those offenses are going to keep up the pace that they were on last year. If I had to guess, I'm going to go with Brandon Ayuk and Stephon Diggs out of those two, but that is because I am just such a Nico Collins hater.
Yeah, I get it. And look, I mean, I think in terms of like finding guys that could bust, there's plenty of guys. I mentioned Devon Achane, firmly in the other camp as well. Marvin Harrison Jr. could bust. Nico, yes. Chris Olave, absolutely could.
DJ Moore, we're already expecting regression compared to his price.
Malik Nabers, right? I mean, there's a world where Kyren Henry does, or Kyren Williams does bust. DJ Moore, Tank Dell, those guys. I mean, I think all of those guys are pretty glaring bust candidates. You just don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like people are kind of leaning into the fact that there's so much volatility in this range this year that nobody's going to probably be able to get it right, like as a sure thing. So, yeah. So
my big bet is obviously Chris Olave not living up to his current price.
Yeah,
that's my biggest take by far.
So then in rounds 4 or 7, this is the backbone of your team. These players are your running back and wide receiver twos that give you weekly stability. You know, you're plugging these guys into like your last starting spots, your flex spots. You have a few high scoring weeks in a season for each of these guys. And the reality is
16 players in this range last year busted compared to their ADP, finishing as backup level players. So that's literally 44% of the players in the range. So you've got 10 players in this range that boomed, that far exceeded their ADP, making up about 28% of the group, and the other 10 maintained value equaling about 28% of the group. So same there.
Yep.
That's, geez, those busts there, 44%. That's a big number in this range.
I mean,
I'm just gonna take a little guess here. Just thinking out loud. Who do you generally see going in rounds 4 to 7? Like
running backs. Oh,
running backs, yes. The other one is all of those high profile rookies.
True.
High profile rookies, not named Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, because they're outliers, so they're going even higher this year. I mean, those are guys that could be bus candidates. Did you mention Nabers in rounds 2 to 3? Like,
yeah,
he could absolutely be a bus candidate. Yep. Yeah. Rounds 4 to 7, right? You got in 2023 guys like JSN that were going in that range that didn't do anything for you. Guys like Quentin Johnston going in that range that didn't do anything for you. Charbonnet going on the tail end of that for sure. And then this year, it's in that range, it's Ladd McConkey, Brian Thomas, and Keon Coleman all going in the same range. Jonathan Brooks going in the 7th round as well, who I like at price, but I could be totally wrong there. And that's a huge risk to take.
Yeah, I think a lot of these guys are risky, and a lot of this is going to rely on player takes. Like,
yep.
How good are you at predicting, which rarely anybody is that good at it, predicting who's going to be productive this year and who doesn't. Is there some secret sauce, Ryan, for you, like predicting players? You know, you made the league projections tool, but like before that, like, is there a secret sauce to trying to predict like who's going to be productive and who's going to bust this year?
No. Short answer is no. In terms of how I manage it, it's kind of the same way that I like to operate the dynasty side of things. Is as you said earlier, this range includes a lot of those rookie players, running backs, wide receivers that we have high hopes for, but they're so inherently unproven. I'm going to avoid rookies at all costs in a redraft league because there is no future prospects for it. And it's such an unproven that the bust rate for it, I assume, I don't have the numbers in front of me, I assume the bust rate is considerably higher than that of the other proven talents that go in this area.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that's true. And so yeah. Like while drafting at the beginning of the 4th round, will give you a pretty serious advantage. Like the rest of this range, pretty much, like I said, player takes. Going for the reliable option in this range is a lot harder than you think to find. There's not a ton of reliable guys here, right? Which is why when they do, like when you've seen in small sample sizes, you've seen Travis Etienne fall down to this range. That's why he's such a good pick here.
Yeah,
because he is somewhat reliable. He's a guy that's getting like 70% plus of the snaps on his team in a backfield where he has receiving upside.
Yes.
So those guys are like hard to come by.
He's a good pick in fantasy.
You definitely need to have tools to navigate the landmines in this section of the draft, which is why you need some kind of tool or draft guide. Oh, wait, we have a draft guide. And we've been waiting to tell you about it. You can get the draft guide. It is like, I think, 50 pages long. Chock full of information, positional strategy, draft strategy, rankings, round by round player analysis, player profiles, things like that. You can get this at flockfantasy.com/domain. Use code domain, sign up for the Mother Flocker tier. Any Mother Flocker tier with code domain gets you the draft guide. So We'd love for you to take a look at it. We've spent months on this, lots of creative design, lots of research by our team, including Ryan. So shout out to our team for that, but we'd love for you to have it. Like I said, flockfantasy.com/domain. Use code domain. Ryan Bread, it is time for the game show.
Ayo.
Indeed it is. We're going to get a little bit in the weeds today. I know last week was a pretty interesting one in terms of the colleges and, you know, draftal, so to speak. But today we're doing some NFL rules, some obscure, random NFL rules. And I think we're just going to jump right into it. It's going to be a fun one. I'm excited to see what some of the answers are and just how wrong they are. But question number one, if in a game a player is caught wearing illegal equipment, how long is that player suspended? And we're not talking illegal like knives and other weapons. We're talking illegal like a tinted visor or something of that.
Does this include like what was that stuff in the 80s that was a big deal? Like Stick'em?
Stick'em?
Yeah.
No.
That this just is like, doesn't include that. No, it's like actual so. Equipment. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've got mine.
Yeah, I've got mine.
Yeah. All right, you go with
what
your guess. You go with your guess first, Aaron.
Okay, my guess is one game.
I'm going two games.
Bradley?
I guess we're going to have to do Price is Right rules on this one. The correct answer is one down.
Oh, okay.
One mandatory down, so they're able to not use the illegal equipment and move on from there.
Wow.
Okay. What does one down mean?
They get put down. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so like funny. Football is a game. They yeah. go with four downs.
Yep.
One of those.
Okay. So.
Well, you were closer.
Yeah, I guess.
Avery wow. got it.
Okay.
That's funny.
Cool.
The second question is, if a team uses excessive timeouts, think Michigan basketball, the dream team.
Right. Yes.
How many yards is the resulting
Michigan
penalty?
Basketball is the Fab Five, not the dream team.
Oh, shoot. You're right. I'm not a basketball fan. Go hockey.
You can tell.
Gosh. All right. Michigan sucks, I've got my guess.
So how many yards is the resulting penalty?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got mine.
I mean, there's only so many options. Right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Spot of the foul.
yeah, right.
I'm going 10 yards.
I'm going under. I'll go 5 yards.
Ding, ding, ding. Avery, you are correct. Nice. It is 5 yards.
That's so,
such a crapshoot.
That's such a like insignificant penalty.
I know.
I figured it's something.
Yeah, you definitely think it'd be
cause,
higher.
Because you would think like if an excessive timeout was, if someone tried to call a timeout with 2 minutes left, like there should be a runoff, right? Because runoffs, when time is precious, would be the big penalty, right? You would right. expect, because yeah. the only time someone's going to be using excessive timeouts is when they really need to take a timeout. So it should just be runoff.
Right. Yeah.
No. So maybe it includes a runoff.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I would assume that if it's under 2 minutes, it would be ruled similar to that of like throwing a challenge flag that you don't have.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm not a referee. I just, you know, like to yell spot foul when I see PI. Moving on. The home team is required to provide how many footballs for gameplay?
I feel like we should know this after Deflategate.
I was going to say Deflategate, baby.
I've got mine. It's just a number. Like, I can't overthink it, or I'm just going to.
What's yours?
I'm going with 8 balls.
I'm going to go 20. I'm going high because I feel like during the Deflategate thing,
my first one was going to be like 11 or 12, but I think it ends up, I think it was less than that. Cause it's not including kickoff situations. I think we'll see. What's the answer, Ryan?
The correct answer for a clean sweep by Avery is 24.
Wow. Jeez, dude.
No way.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, every single time they show the ball boys on the sidelines, they've got the ponchos on that have at least two in front, and then there's the one that they're holding, and if it's raining, toweling down, so on and so forth. So
got
a lot of balls out there.
Yeah, quite a few. Dang, dude, 4-2. I got to stop the bleeding some point.
I want
to
do the tiebreaker. Let's
do the tiebreaker. Yeah,
let's do it.
So,
all right. Which position on the offensive team can request a playable ball during inclement weather conditions?
I mean, you got yours?
A playable ball?
Yeah. So like
request a playable.
Like a new ball.
Oh, I know.
I'm guessing the center.
Yeah, I'm guessing the center as well. Yeah.
And both of you are correct. It is indeed the center.
Yeah. That makes sense.
There are really only two options for that one. Real coin toss between quarterback and center.
It's definitely either.
I was actually going to guess left tackle.
It was the center or the tight end, so I was going center. So.
Oh, I was thinking the punter.
Yeah. All right, good deal. Yeah, 4-2. Is that four straight? Because you,
it's four straight. Woo! I think I got to stop the bleeding. Run.
Let's go. All right. Okay. Very cool. Let's go to our next topic here.
Yeah, we're gonna look at a little 2024 rookie price check. We're right on that precipice of heavy draft season. We're starting to get the mix of training camp, hype news, and all that type stuff that's just going to keep these rookies rising and change in values a little bit from when we drafted them, you know, in the majority of drafts a few months ago. I just want to highlight a few of them because, I mean, every rookie's value has changed to this point, but there are a few of them, mainly some of the big name guys that I find at least a little bit interesting, and we'll just go top down using the domain ADP tool that you can find on flockfantasy.com.
/domain.
Mm-hmm.
/domain, of course.
Yep.
And we'll just start with Marvin Harrison Jr. Currently, he's wide receiver 1 in the class. Obviously, I don't think anybody's questioning that.
Mm-mm.
And he is the wide receiver 5 overall, which we'll kind of get into this a little bit later with Malik Nabers, who we are, at least I want to touch on. But What do you guys think about him being ahead of guys like Puka Nacua, Garrett Wilson, AJ Brown, who might have that production in year one that Marvin Harrison Jr. might not have?
It's tough to deny the fact, because I wrestle with this. The investor in me, the dynasty player in me, thinks this is too high for a rookie. Just move off for a proven player. Marv is so good, it's not even funny. I think he's the best prospect since we've been doing this. I really do. Mm-hmm. I'm higher than most on his situation. So it's hard for me to maintain consistency with my arguments because, again, while I do think he's being priced at a ceiling, he might just maintain this value for 7 years. That is very possible. I think the logical thing to do here is sit down tier to a Puka Nacua. That's what my brain says. AJ Brown, like you want Marv to be Puka Nacua and AJ Brown, right? So I think that part makes sense, but I recommend down tiering from him more than some of the other receivers in that range because he's a rookie, but I don't think I'm going out of my way to do that. I think on teams where I have Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm feeling really, really good about it. I'm curious what you think on that though.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of on the fence with you too. I see the upside in it. I understand it. One of the better prospects that we've ever seen. Neighbors is a guy that, I mean, Ryan is opinionated on, that I've also kind of flirted with the idea of selling him, but for some reason I just can't stomach it.
I mean, Neighbors is also, I'll just segue it, Ryan, because I think these two guys kind of blend together.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so Nathan and I got into, I wouldn't call it an argument per se in our internal.
No.
Yeah, no, we had a knockout, drag him out, like you should see the other guy type fight.
That's crazy.
No, I was just devil's advocating.
Yes. The question that I posed, this was yesterday. It looks like it has since now changed on the expert ranks on the Flock ADP tool. But my question was, why is Malik Nabers wide receiver 8? To me, I said it's the most obvious sell of all time, which obviously is a little bit hyperbolic in nature. But at the same time, the argument that I used is that wide receiver 8 ahead of, like, at the time, again, ahead of Puka Nacua, it looks like those two flipped, was that Malik Nabers is already being counted as having a better season or a season on par with what Puka did last year, which was statistically the best rookie wide receiver season ever. And while I understand that Nabers comes with a higher pedigree, it just, to me, means that margin for error is so slim. Because as you said with Marv, he's already being priced at his ceiling. And if he does any sort of misstep, or Daniel Jones does what he did last year before he got injured, or the first 3 years of his career, it doesn't look good. And
yeah,
that offense is not good enough to support a wide receiver one to that caliber without some change. And for me, it just, like I said, the margin for error is just so slim for him to maintain that high of value.
Right. Yeah. I honestly agree with you. What was your devil's advocating? What was that take, Nathan? I'm curious because I feel like Ryan's got a really good point.
Yeah. So basically, my point was, if he puts up 1,000 yards, right, which is a pretty modest expectation with what a lot of those caliber wide receivers are doing in the last couple of years.
Right.
And they're in prime position to get a new quarterback next year. Like, do we not see a Garrett Wilson-esque trajectory where his value is really safe and he kind of just sticks around in the second round? That's kind of what I'm just assuming from Malik Nabers. I'm assuming is going to happen. Again, because he's a better prospect than a lot of these guys.
True.
In the past couple of years. And in a situation that at least he has a competent head coach in Brian Daboll.
True.
And doesn't have a Zach Wilson. Yeah, it's Daniel Jones. Yeah, it's not great. But it's not going to take much for Malik Nabers to maintain his value, I think. And Puka, right, after having the best wide receiver season ever, like Ryan said, with a stable offensive situation, still only wide receiver 7, how is Nabers going to maintain his price at wide receiver 8? Well, we know how the Dynasty community treats players like Puka Nacua.
True.
Players that they are dead wrong about, did not see coming, were absolutely blindsided by, they short him.
Yeah.
They do. So, like, I think that's more of a Puka Nacua is a value than Malik Nabers being, like, a super hard sell. But I also am going the other way. Like, I could go the other way, right? Because, like, he, even though he gets the benefit of being a top 10 pick, even though Puka had to earn it and the Dynasty community hates being wrong, like, I could see something. Well, like, if Nabers puts up 700-800 yards, he is going to probably drop down around.
Probably. Because
there is an avenue where he's, you know, in quarterback purgatory, like a Chris Olave, and ends up being in that range, kind of stuck around later, 3-4 turn, which would be a better price for him then.
True.
So I guess it's kind of just your projection on what he's going to do his first year. But like, if he puts up 1,000 yards with Daniel Jones, he's going to maintain his value. He just is, with his draft capital alone.
I guess that's probably true. Ryan, one thing we do have to consider here is the Dynasty community in terms of how they value players and how they adjust their rankings after seeing certain production thresholds met. It's not always logical. In fact, most of the times it's illogical. So I think if it made sense how we value players as community and how the community does value players, then yes, if he had a Garrett Wilson season, he would decrease in value, right? Especially with quarterback uncertainty. I guess really the question is, though, like at the point where you're talking about him putting up those numbers and the uncertainty at quarterback, I'm more worried. Like with Garrett Wilson, I don't think if you look back 3 years ago and talk about where Garrett Wilson was being valued, I don't think you were worried about his value, even though, you know, he had questions, right? The quarterback was a question. His building on his rookie season in his second season was a question. All that was a question. But here's the thing. Here's the thing about Garrett Wilson, though. Garrett Wilson was going in the sixth, seventh round of startups before his rookie season. So that is a big difference. However, with Garrett Wilson, I think the main thing, if we could see 3 years in the future, was like, okay, for the next 3 years, Garrett Wilson will be productive, but he's not going to be a wide receiver one. And so even dating back to last year, like even though Garrett Wilson has maintained his value after not really performing a lot, you're still losing quite a bit of production by rostering Garrett Wilson at that price instead of rostering, you know, Tyreek Hill at that price, right? And so I think with Malik Nabers, I think I'm less worried about what his value is going to do and more worried about the potential production I could get from somebody else value equivalent. It's not that I don't necessarily believe that Nabers can maintain his value, because I do. I more am inclined to say I'm not sure Malik Nabers will have a good enough situation to be like an elite, like 17 points per game plus producing asset for the next two and a half years. And so because of that, I'm inclined to go get like a very heavy point score for the next 2 years, especially if I'm trying to win my championships. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like his value insulation is good. I feel like his value is going to be insulated, even if he is technically, like, logically a sell. But unless you're like a multi-year rebuild, I think it makes a lot of sense to go trade for somebody who's going to score more points. Make sense?
I fully agree with you. It does. That aspect totally makes sense. And that's kind of what I'm arguing for here is like Malik Nabers could have a very, very, very successful rookie season in terms of production. The projections that I made have him with 120 targets, 1,000 yards, and 5 touchdowns, which is a very good season really on paper. Good. The issue, though, is, and maybe for some reason I'm just inflating everybody's values, but that's wide receiver 29 based in these projections. And there wasn't like bias put in. No implicit bias, nothing like that. It was just done based on the numbers from careers and some extrapolation. If he finishes with a wide receiver 29 season, his value is going to be nowhere near the wide receiver 8 that it is now.
I mean,
I'd likely think it falls in between those two numbers, but I digress.
I don't necessarily think so, because I feel like you saw Garrett Wilson do the exact same thing and still kind of maintain his value as a top 12 dynasty wide receiver. I mean, well, right? Don't you think? The other thing I would ask, and this is just more of an exploratory question, is on your projections tool. I'm assuming that is going to not account for any injuries, so he would probably be bumped up to a, you know, wide receiver 2, right? If he stayed healthy, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm the only thing I'm factoring in are suspensions, okay, which obviously we don't know any of them yet, but Rashee Rice and Jordan Addison are the only two that are really getting hit with that so far.
Right. Yeah.
In these, but yeah, it's an interesting topic of conversation with how the dynasty landscape in the past few years has just started valuing wide receivers so much different than, or not so much different, but so much more valuable than other positions, because you are seeing situations like this where, and don't get me wrong, I love Malik Nabers. He's a great profile. But the wide receiver eight mark is just such a high bar for rookies that you typically don't see, frankly. I mean, there's a reason why there was a 3-year breakout window for the longest time, but
yeah,
we'll move on and touch another position for a little bit here. And we'll talk about the quarterback position. We're not going to talk about Caleb Williams because I think everybody's kind of the wide receiver or sorry, quarterback one for most classes does usually go around where Caleb Williams is going. We saw it last year, albeit a little bit later on in the second round, than where Caleb is being drafted. But, the next three quarterbacks I find super, super interesting because on the flock rankings, it goes Drake May, Jaden Daniels, JJ McCarthy.
Yeah.
I personally have Daniels and May flipped just because I think Daniels, one, starts the full season and two, has the rushing upside that May isn't necessarily going to be able to reach.
Hold on. But to clarify, you said Daniels was, May was ahead of Daniels?
Yes.
On the ADP
community rank, May is 33, Daniels is 35. Avery Huffman's rankings as of July 2nd, May 32, Daniels 33.
Yeah, I know I have them back to back, but yeah, from market value standpoint, I'd take Daniels. But like even, oh man, I'm going to check that real quick. I thought you were using the ADP tool.
Yeah, I am using the ADP tool.
What's on the ADP tool?
Well, those are the rankings. Oh my goodness. I'm just spilling all over myself. Those
okay.
are the rankings.
That's why I was confused. I was like, I'm pretty sure in the ADP tool, Daniels is up by a pretty significant margin at this point.
As he should be.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I agree with that.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, there's a good chance that May, the immediate return on production, like, is nothing, right? So, because you know, they might just not start him yet, which I don't blame him. And Jacoby Brissett's serviceable. He's a good quarterback. So, but keep going. I just wanted to double check that because I was like, I haven't seen that, but.
Yeah, that's my bad. I'll wear that one.
You're good.
But as of the actual ADP tool, which I also do have pulled up here and did use for the majority of this research section here, there are some interesting guys who fall behind some of those rookie quarterbacks, or I guess fall around some of those rookie quarterbacks, which is the Purdy, Dak, Tua, Goff, and then on the other side is Kirk Cousins and Bryce Young. I'd love to hear your guys' opinions on the values of these two guys, because as much as they seem like pretty decent prospects to have and decent profiles, they're likely not going to give you a lot of points this year. And I think that they're inevitably going to be due for value to dip and be way better buys later on in the season than they are right now.
I mean, this
and
is...
And if at,
go ahead,
at cost... Never mind. It's just at cost, I think it'd be better to miss on one of these rookie quarterbacks who's not going to give you anything and go elsewhere with, right. I mean, so many guys behind it that are not necessarily going to get you top 12 production, but still good numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think this is the case with some rookies. Trey Benson is an example of this. I think with Trey Benson, I'm not opposed to selling him this year because you're going to see a value dip when he ultimately doesn't start day one. Right. And so I think that is also the case with these guys. Now, I think you have already started to see their value trend down. In terms of Purdy and Tua, I don't think it's close. You take Purdy and Tua there over May, not even close.
Yeah.
In terms of McCarthy ahead of Dak and Goff, you take Dak and Goff, not even close. So let's get that out of the way. I agree, though. Like, I mean, how soon do you think McCarthy's starting in Minnesota, Ryan?
I see a world that he doesn't for the first year. Unironically, I see a world that he doesn't.
I think
the Vikings, they don't require a quarterback who is going to win you games. They just need somebody who is not going to screw up.
Yeah, I mean,
and
just
if Sam Darnold is
Mullins.
Able to do that,
yeah,
exactly. Mullins and Josh Dobbs, like if your name isn't Jaren Hall, you have a potential to do okay for the Vikings,
right?
And I don't think that at the stage in their careers where they're at, that there is anything that JJ McCarthy can do that Sam Darnold cannot do.
True.
And if they just stay within the guidelines of the offense and stay, you know, continue to draw within the lines, I think that Sam Darnold will be fine because he doesn't need to win games. He just needs to not lose them.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think they're, why be in a rush to start JJ McCarthy when you're playing the long game anyways? Like we've seen time and time again, so many developmental quarterbacks that are drafted in the first round thrown into a situation where they're expected to be the guy and they're just not ready. That's how so many quarterback careers are ruined. And the Vikings are just building a situation where they don't have to do that. And they can still contend for a wild card spot this year. They still really could. I mean, so
that's the full reason why they gave Sam Darnold the contract that they gave him. I mean, they gave him $10 million, which is, I mean, he was a backup for all of last year.
Yeah.
So they give him priority backup numbers to be the starter. Mm-hmm. You don't do that if you're just going to plan on starting the JJ McCarthy right away.
No, you don't.
No,
absolutely not.
No, I agree. I mean, I think you're essentially, this is a roundabout way of saying that these guys are probably going to have value dips after their first year. Naturally, you should sell them away now and then buy them after the dip. And obviously the risky thing about that is what you have to know, you know, practically in a dynasty league, if you sell them away, there's a chance you don't get them back, right? Because there's a chance, you know, the person you sell to might take the value loss and not want to sell low, which would be smart of them, which means you're going to have to pivot to other guys in that range. You mentioned the guys, you know, Tua, who's gotten a big value boost, Purdy, who hasn't yet but should, Dak and Goff. I think if you're even sniffing those guys with these two guys, I don't think it's even close. But, fourth, fifth round guys, it's tough because there's not quarterbacks around there. So when you're making moves, it better be like on a team where you're set at quarterback, right? Because that 4-5 turn, you're really not seeing a lot there in terms of value besides McCarthy and May.
Right.
So I think you've got to be getting some higher upside other positional assets. But at the same time, I do think that your logic is absolutely sound and it's absolutely correct that theoretically we should probably be moving off of these rookies right now. So
yeah, and
might be too late.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I know. And I kind of want to talk about these last two guys in a cluster too, Xavier Worthy and Keon Coleman. They're going a little bit apart, but generally you're kind of seeing similar deals go for them down in Dynasty. But Ryan, what do you think about them?
The big sticking point I have with Xavier Worthy is that there are guys around him that I think have, I don't want to say a better opportunity for points because I think Xavier Worthy is in a good spot for this year, but George Pickens is going behind Xavier Worthy and Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Deebo Samuel. I think Pickens and Samuel will both easily outscore Worthy. They're both much closer to number one options on their team than Worthy is. And Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I think, just has a better profile. Now, granted, last year didn't go too well for him, but the big sticking point I have is that Xavier Worthy is wide receiver 25 and Rashee Rice is wide receiver 29, which I personally find baffling because if Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy are both playing the full schedule of games, I don't think we're having this conversation as to who is the higher valued receiver on that team. And I understand that that's due to Rashee Rice being at a value dip because of his impending suspension. But as you guys say all the time, Dynasty is played in 3-year windows. And if we're taking Xavier Worthy ahead of Rashee Rice, in my opinion, I think you're taking an incredible value difference and losing out on what's going to end up being a lot of points when Rice gets back in the lineup.
I have this feeling that if none of this legal stuff had gone on with Rashee Rice, Worthy and Rashee would have been a lot more value equivalent than there being a discrepancy. And you're right, we would have preferred Rice there just because he is a little more proven. But I think I don't think we should forget that Xavier Worthy, I mean, his upside is much, much higher.
I think we
were going to, if it were not for the Rashee Rice events this year, I mean, in the early, early offseason before this stuff happened, we were advocating to pivot off Rashee Rice. Because he was going so high. He was ranked incredibly high and we knew he had limited upside. So I think
I'll build off of your argument.
Yeah,
because I think Ryan, they're drafted 1 year apart. Xavier Worthy is and was considered by most to be a superior prospect to Rashee Rice.
100%.
So I feel like, yes, Rashee Rice is undervalued. I'm not sure that I would say that Xavier Worthy, the honest truth of it is, I don't know how to value either Rice, Worthy, or Hollywood Brown. because I think all of them have about an equal shot to be the wide receiver one in Kansas City. That is my honest opinion. And so in the event that Xavier Worthy is the wide receiver one there this year, which I think is possible outside of Travis Kelce, obviously, I think that's possible. You're going to see his value go up. Like, I don't think it's outside. What I'm trying to get at is I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibilities that Xavier Worthy does outproduce Rashee Rice this year. Rashee Rice was good last year, but a lot of what Rashee Rice's production came on wasn't, it's not like he was a super high target guy, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like Rashee Rice, when you were looking at his production, let me pull this up real quick so I can fact check myself. Last year, he had 102 targets. He had 7 touchdowns. Really the only, he had less than 1,000 yards. Really, he was, you know, a wide receiver 3 last year because of his touchdown rate. Touchdowns are volatile. I would feel a lot better about Rashee Rice if, for example, he had gotten 120 targets, which I know is a lot in that offense, and I know that's setting a pretty high bar. But when we're talking about 102 targets, I mean, when I'm looking here even at just like some equivalent values from a target perspective, Josh Downs last year got 98 targets, right? He got four less targets. He just had 5 less touchdowns and so finished, you know, significantly lower because he had like 35, 40 less points. 157 points for Josh Downs compared to 212. So you're talking about a difference of 60 points. How many of that was touchdowns? Half of that was touchdowns. Obviously, you have a yard, you have about 200 yards there as well. So then you've got that makes up the yards and touchdowns. But at the same time, like, I just am not like, he didn't have a dominant enough season with consistent enough, or not even consistent, sustainable enough production to where I'm looking at Rashee Rice and saying he's the clear wide receiver one there. I feel like Xavier Worthy has such high upside. I don't know. I think it could be Rashee Rice though. Like, I'm less opinionated on it than you are, I think, in terms of, I think it could go any way in that, offense. So now, but I mean, it just depends. Like, there are guys around Xavier Worthy, T. Higgins, right? DJ Moore, DK, Debo. You mentioned Debo, right? Brian Thomas, you can make the argument. JSN is going way too late, in my opinion. I think you could make an argument to take those guys over him. I don't think I'm hung up on which Chiefs wide receiver to take because I don't know. But that being said, I don't know. I just don't know about Xavier Worthy. I think part of the reason I don't know is because he's really an outlier in terms of the type of player he is and the skill set he is and the athleticism paired with the very small build is interesting. So I just don't know.
With Coleman, it's a little bit easier.
Coleman is a little bit easier
to me because his avenue to being an alpha wide receiver there is very clear, and it'll be very clear when he does or doesn't, you know, fill those shoes, and not Diggs's shoes, but just the lead wide receiver in that offense. And did they draft him to do that? Will they eventually get another wide receiver there to pair with him that maybe might even overtake him? Like, I don't know. All I know is that it's going to be a lot easier to navigate that situation this year and his development than I think the whole Worthy, Rashee, Hollywood situation too. Because, I mean, Hollywood, I mean, everyone's just assuming that Hollywood's going to be gone after this year, which I think is a healthy bet. But what if he stays? What if he stays? Then that's a wrench thrown into everyone's plans, and then we're having this conversation all over again in 2025.
And I think it's baked into their prices to some extent, but it just makes it all together.
I don't think
it is.
I think their prices assume that Hollywood's going to be gone because Hollywood is by far the cheapest because he does have the most to prove and the least amount of investment.
I mean, you've got a first round wide receiver that just went to Kansas City as being the wide receiver 25. I feel like most of the time they would have overreacted to that.
But people hated Worthy.
Yeah, that's somewhat true.
And I think the issue with him is just that his, as you said, Avery, he's an outlier, and his skill set, at least in terms of what he did at Texas in essentially all 3 years, is such a different thing than that of what Rashee Rice does, and way more similar to that of Hollywood Brown. They're both that deep threat field stretcher, as evident by both of their 40 times being insanely fast.
Sure, yeah.
And I think that is just going to lend Xavier Worthy to be a little bit more, like, fewer targets, higher touchdowns, just because his game is predicated on the deep ball, and Rashee Rice is going to be that, like, Deontay Johnson over the middle target hog as Travis Kelce starts to age out of the offense and frees up more of that role.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. Rookies are tough, man. I mean, with rookies, you know, you've got a fair amount of risk all across the board. It was a really good rookie class this year. So that combined with some of the interesting skill sets and situations, I mean, wide receiver is just more plentiful than it also used to be. So that kind of throws a wrench through the entire wide receiver market, not just rookies. But yeah, man, this is interesting stuff. I market checks are interesting, and especially with rookies. So I definitely think, you know, it's all about, you know, your team build and what your portfolio looks like. Sometimes you're going to have to diversify in that aspect as well. But all right, cool. Let's wrap this thing up. But Ryan, thanks for holding down the fort today for John. It's good topics and definitely good discussion on today's pod. But make sure you leave a rating on the video, or I'm sorry, on the podcast, and make sure you also share this with your friends. Make sure you check us out on YouTube, Domain Fantasy Football and Dynasty Domain, whether you play redraft or Dynasty Fantasy Football or BOFA. And also make sure you go to flockfantasy.com/domain, use code domain, sign up for any Mother Flocker tier, and receive our 2024 Domain Fantasy Football Draft Guide. It is awesome. It is very pretty. Super cool. You will like it. It is definitely worth your membership. So yeah, we appreciate you guys joining us. We'll be back on here soon. We will see you guys next week.
It's a show about fantasy football.